Hello and welcome to the 10th episode of the Pop Papa Napcast. My name is TJ Deitch. I'm your host and the proprietor of poppapa.com. That's poppapa.com. As listeners know, this is the podcast I record while my daughter is sleeping. I am a work from home dad, a freelance writer who does his job when he can, when not taking care of his nearly two-year-old daughter, while my wife's at work making the big bucks. As listeners will remember, last week's episode I said that we are getting ready to go to Disney World, and that is exactly what's happening. I'm recording this now, but when you hear it, assuming I do get it up in time, we will actually have been in Disney World for 3 days, and we will be 2 days away from my dad's birthday and 3 days away from my daughter's birthday. So it's a pretty eventful trip, in addition to all the, you know, Disney stuff that you're gonna do. We have some pretty big celebrations going on, so that's going to be a lot of fun. But before I get there, before I get to the future place where you're listening to me, I've got 5 stories for CBR that I'm actively working on right now. I've got 2 for Marvel that I got to get turned in, so there's a lot on my plate. This is Monday as I'm recording this right now. I've been surprisingly productive, and so hopefully I'm going to be in pretty good shape. I haven't started packing yet. You might actually be able to hear the dryer in the background. Got the laundry going. As soon as that's all done, I can start packing my clothes and getting ready. My wife did all the heavy lifting of getting stuff for herself and our daughter ready. Yesterday, she's like 90% done, it looks like. We just need to add in my stuff and then the stuff that, you know, we can't pack just yet. You know, we're all looking forward to it. Lucy still doesn't really comprehend what's going on. We've told her a bunch of times, so we'll kind of see how that goes. You know, the big question in the last episode was whether to use one of those child harness leashes or not. We decided against it. Although by the time you're hearing this, in real life, in real time, we might have decided to buy one and use it, depending on how crazy she gets. Don't know how she's going to do with the characters or all those people, but we'll see. She tends to be a little bit shy, but once she warms up, she really warms up. So I think she'll get a kick out of it and have a good time. And then the other thing that, you know, is concerning as a parent is the actual flight. Now, we've flown before once, and on the actual flight, she did fine, but that was still, gosh, 6, 7, 8 months ago. It was a while ago. I don't remember exactly when, but she did well. But the problem was that on the way back, we got a huge delay. And so it took forever for us to actually get on the plane. There was all this moving and all this nonsense. And so she was getting super bored. She handled it as well as she could. I get very upset when things like that happen. So I was probably more angry than she was. But hopefully that won't happen. Everything will be running smoothly. We're going out of different airports this time. Obviously down to Florida. So that's different than the one we went to in Detroit. But we're also flying out of a different airport up here. So hopefully the experience will be a little bit more interesting. I mentioned how it takes Lucy a little while to warm up. This past weekend, we went to a party at our friend's house, Adam and Tracy, for Tracy's birthday. They had this party last year. It's a big crawfish boil. They're both from New Orleans. And so they get all this crawfish in from the airport and then cook it throughout the day. And you just stand around a table eating it. And it's a really good time. And it's great because they're kind of centrally located for all of our friends that we used to work with at Wizard to kind of come up. And it makes sense. Like, we're the furthest north pretty much from that group. They're right in the middle. You know, our other friends are south, further down into Jersey and other. There's a lot of people in New York City area. So it's real spread out, but it's kind of a nice central location for everybody to get to. And so it was great seeing all these people that I haven't necessarily had time to actually spend with them. And while a lot of people think that, you know, being in the business I'm in, that the New York Comic Con is like this great place to kind of meet up and talk to everybody and see how everybody's doing. But it's not really the case because you wind up seeing somebody on the floor for 10 minutes. And then, you know, as a reporter, I've got to run off and cover something. Or as a, you know, comic book company employee, they've got to go do something or get somebody to the right place. And so there's not a lot of time to actually meet up. And with a lot of my friends, they're fairly high up at their companies, and so they've got a lot of business dinners planned. So kind of afterwards, it's like, well, I've got to go to this dinner, but if you want to hang out after that, we can do that. But I'm pretty much an old man at this point, and I don't really know if I have that in me anymore. I definitely got to hang out with some cool people this time, this last New York Comic Con, because different schedules allowed for it. But it's definitely one of those things where you really don't get to spend much quality time with people. And so this party was great because I got to see almost all of our friends from Wizard, got to hang out. Lucy got to see him again. It took her a really long time to warm up. She slept on the way down and probably could have slept another hour, but didn't. And so she was kind of groggy and, you know, doing the koala hold on my wife and I. And eventually she did warm up, and she really got friendly with our friend Sam, which was fun. Like, she actually, my wife was telling me, I didn't see this, but we were all talking in a circle, and my wife had taken Lucy inside to change her diaper or something, and then came out, and they've got kind of like a raised patio with a foot tall like wall at the end of it. And so she kind of like went to the end of that and just started hollering for Sam, and I don't think any of us heard it because she's not super loud when you're outside. She's super loud when you're inside, that I can attest to. But you know, she's like, Sam, Sam, Sam. And so then my wife like brought her back down and near Sam, and so they were able to go hang out and play. So that it's really cool seeing, you know, my kid interact with my friends. It's definitely not something that I would have even thought of back when we were all working together. A couple guys, you know, were married before me or around the same time as me, and a couple had kids before me. But, you know, in my memories of that group, kids aren't necessarily there, you know? But it's cool to kind of see them interact. And, you know, my kid got to meet one of my friend's kids. It was just cool. It's just cool to kind of see this become maybe a generational thing if that winds up being what happens. And now I'm going to move into what's new with Lou. I actually forgot to talk about this last week, but it's been really funny and cute and a little confusing, I'll admit. But Lucy has started saying, no problem, which is adorable when like an almost 2-year-old kind of looks up at you. You ask her what she wants and she goes, no problem. Cute, right? But the problem is that she doesn't mean it the way that we understand it. No problem means like, yeah, sure, whatever, that's cool. She's saying no problem as in just no, or no, period, problem, which I think may be the best way to interpret it. And even though I know that in my head, it's like every time she says it, I'm like, oh, she said no problem, because I say it a lot. That's probably where she picked it up. But like I said, she's not understanding what it means. And therefore, it's one of the many things when trying to translate a kid this age's speech where you have to input what they've said into your brain, run it through like the decoding process of things that you've already established that she says or does, and then figure out how to respond to her. So now I have to remember no problem means no at this point. But then sometimes it sounds like she does mean no problem, but she's really just saying no. It's confusing. It's kind of like living with a Bizarro. I don't know if you're familiar with comic books, but in the Superman comics, there's a Bizarro clone of Superman, and he speaks in opposites. So he'll say, me am happy, when he's angry or sad. It gets really confusing. Certain writers are really good with it. Certain writers are really confusing with it. It confuses me because that constant processing thing gets old for me after a while. But it's definitely what you have to do with a kid. I was telling somebody else, I know I made the comparison to the movie Enemy Mine, which I definitely have to watch again, especially now with these kind of new parent glasses on that I have. But the other thing that raising a kid this age who's talking a lot reminds me of is ending up on a channel that's not in English if you don't speak whatever the language is. So like the Spanish channel, or we've got like a Korean channel here. Any of those things, but when it's a commercial for Tide or something that you're familiar with, it's all these words you don't understand, and then Tide, and then more words you don't understand, and then usually Tide again at the end. That's kind of what it's like trying to understand a kid. You know, they talk so fast, you're just trying to bring it all into your head, whatever you can, remember, and process, and get that through. But, I mean, really, it's maybe every 2 or 3 words. It's, at the party that I mentioned, it was funny because people were like, oh man, I can never understand kids. And I'm thinking like, you don't need to, you know, if you don't have one and you're just dealing with, you know, well, especially if you just don't have one, you don't have to deal with it, but it is as much a foreign language as, you know, you can, or maybe like a pidgin. I know pidgin is like a combination of different languages. I think that's all right. I took a linguistics class, but it was several years ago. So I think that's kind of the right area. I'll look it up and let you know at the end of the show if I'm wrong or not. But it's a lot like that, because you understand a couple words, everything else sounds kind of like mushmouth gibberish, and you just kind of do the best you can while you're doing it and hope that you're not coming up with something completely crazy, which isn't right, and that doesn't bum them out and make them upset. Because, you know, another thing I learned from that linguistics class, actually, was there was a linguist who had like a 2-year-old daughter or something, and he realized through just a few tests on his own, you know, so they could be anecdotal, but I believe he repeated the process with more and more subjects. But basically, kids understand what they're saying in their brains, and they're saying it correctly in their head, but their mouths and tongues aren't developed enough to actually make the sounds come out the right way. And the way that he kind of tested this, and the story that we learned in the class that our professor told us, was that he would stand in his daughter's room and he would flip the light switch on and off, and he would say, is this the light? And she would say, yite. And he would say, is this the yite? And she would go, no, it's the yite. So just to demonstrate, you know, she can't say light because she hasn't figured out where to put her tongue on the top of her mouth to make that sound. Light. It's like right behind your teeth. They don't really have that yet. And the Y sound is from further back on the top of your mouth. This is all phonetic stuff I had to learn first for this one class that really stuck with me. But so those things just haven't developed yet, and the kid can't do it yet. But it's there in their head. So I know that she knows what she's telling me, but that I can't explain it to her or respond to her the way that she wants me to. And a lot of people think that that's a big reason why the terrible twos happen at this stage. They know what they're saying, but you don't, because you can't understand what their weird pidgin English is supposed to be. But, you know, we try, we do our best. And like I've said before, I think on an earlier episode, this is one of the reasons that we did some of the sign language. And we think we're going to maybe bring back a little bit more, because she keeps getting mixed up on colors a little bit. So we're going to see if there's simple signs for colors. Maybe that'll work. Maybe she's thinking what she's saying means color, but she's actually saying yellow. It can all be really tricky. I mean, this is a hard language to learn, you guys. Ask anyone who's learning English as a second language. The rules change from word to word. It's taken from all different languages. So it's this, and inflection means so much, and synonyms and antonyms and all this crap. And it can be a really difficult language to learn. So, you know, the kid is having a little bit of a problem with it, but I still think she's doing great. Somebody at the party told my wife that they were surprised at how much she was talking, which is cool. I really don't have a context for what, you know, a two-year-old should be doing at this point, but she's pretty much my only source of information. I think she's doing great. Just a few little things here and there that aren't happening, but, you know, they'll get there. She's only two. She's not even two yet. By the time you listen to this, she's not even going to be two. She'll still have a few more days. So I think she's doing great. You know, a lot of people seem to be impressed with what she can do. So, you know, that makes me a proud papa for sure. Another cute thing that Lucy has been doing lately is, you know, when she gets upset, she cries a little bit, even if it's just a few tears. And she goes, tears, tears. And so she used to want us to wipe them with a tissue, which we would if one was in reach. But normally, and since it's been cold for a while, we would just use our long sleeves and kind of wipe her tears. Well, the other day, when we were getting ready for bed, there's a diaper cover that goes over her regular diaper because she goes to the bathroom quite a bit while she's sleeping. She doesn't really like putting it on, but it's really necessary, so we're not changing the sheets and she's not soaked every day. So she doesn't like it and she cries sometimes. She's gotten a little bit better lately, but, you know, generally speaking, she's not a big fan. And I realized that she actually pulled her own sleeve up to, like, you know, mid-palm and dabbed her tears, which I thought was so cute and also kind of sad. But then today, this has gone another step further. I was walking her back from a diaper change and, you know, if she's into one of her cartoons or playing, she really doesn't like to stop and go to the bathroom. But, you know, I don't want to mess on my hands, and I also don't want her sitting in this stuff for so long. So I took her back, and I realized as I was walking back, it's cloudy and cold today, so I was wearing, like, a long-sleeve knit sweatshirt. And she was pulling on my sleeve, and I didn't understand what she was doing, so I kind of stopped and looked down and just kind of let her do what she was going to do. And it turned out that she was pulling my sleeve down again to, like, mid-palm and wiping her eyes with it, which I, again, you know, one of those kind of heartbreaking and also super cute things. So that's been going on. This isn't necessarily like a regular new section of the podcast, but one of the overarching things that I deal with being a stay-at-home parent is balancing my work with trying to be a good dad. Now, you know, I do my best. I fall short sometimes, like we all do. But I think so far I'm doing a pretty good job. But again, like I mentioned in last episode with, you know, the weather getting nicer and me getting worried about leaving my computer to go out and kind of balancing that with work and all this stuff, it's a real worry that I deal with, and it's something that I'm kind of trying to change how I think about, because it's important that I spend time with my daughter. I mean, work's also important and I get it done, but there's some priority shifts that can be made. And I was thinking today that even on the worst day with this freelance job that I have is nowhere near as stressful as when I used to work at Wizard in kind of the waning days. Now, I'm not going to get into too much detail, but for a while there, no joke, we were getting one person, we had at least one person getting laid off every single week. And it was usually on Thursdays. And so we just got to dread that day. And I'm telling you, 3 months, maybe more, at least one person every single Thursday. Basically, what had happened from our estimation is that the company got big in the 90s, you know, based on some new comic book companies that were coming up. And after a while, they were the only real game in town. We were competing with the internet, but didn't really know how, which is why there were like 10 different Wizard websites. And unfortunately, it wasn't necessarily that we didn't know how to do it. It's that the higher-ups didn't know how to get people to do it, which is a different story altogether, and one that I don't even know most of the details on, because I wasn't really involved. But that kind of general dread of going into work every day and wondering who was going to be next. I mean, I saw a lot of friends get laid off, and so you get a little desensitized almost to the worry, because, like, how much can you worry about something like that? But the big thing that became extra stressful was when they decided to close the office in a town called Congers, which is where most of us worked, and make everybody go down to the offices in New York City. Now, the problem with this was that they were not going to increase our pay whatsoever. And, you know, not to talk out of school too much, but we weren't exactly making a huge deal of money there, at least, you know, speaking for myself. And so it became a real question of, do I want to stick with this job that I really like? Because at that point, I was an associate editor, the associate editor for Toy Fair. Basically, my boss and I, Justin, were putting that magazine out on our own. We had a managing editor who took over for our previous managing editor, who had moved up to conventions. The problem with our new managing editor, she was great, super nice person, didn't have any experience. And because she was so new, didn't really know how to manage us specifically, which was a little tricky. But it also, she got sucked into doing other stuff in other departments. So it really was just the two of us putting out a magazine for several months. And, you know, it became the question of, is this job even worth keeping with the exorbitant prices that some of us, many of us, were going to have to pay just to get down to the city? And another thing, you know, we didn't have a kid at that point, but I didn't really like the idea of being down there for so long. The commute is like 2 hours door to door for me. Get in my car, go to the train, take it down to Secaucus, transfer over to Penn, and then walk, you know, 15 minutes to work, which was fine. And it happened to be in the summer, so it was like perfect timing for this thing. But it was one of those things where I had like deep, deep, deep senses of dread about this thing and just not knowing what to do. I took an interview at a place down the street from us that sells bathroom fixtures to like big companies and stuff. And I literally had no business being in that interview. I don't know what on my resume told them that I would be a good person to talk to for this job. And I don't really know why I applied for it aside from it being, you know, the exact opposite of what I was going to be made to do. And even once we got there, I wound up liking the commute. I got to read and write and do a lot of things that I didn't normally do. Of course, I wasn't getting home until 7. And even later, if I happened to miss that first train, which required me to leave about 4:50, but I kind of told everybody, I was like, look, this is how it's going to be. And nobody really seemed to care because I got all my work done and I would bring stuff home if I needed to because I had the whole train ride to work. And then eventually, you know, I got the axe like a bunch of other people before me and eventually the entire magazine itself. So it was almost a relief when it happened because you kind of don't even realize how much of that is in the back of your mind all the time. Okay, I'm probably going to get fired. And it happened at a pretty bad time for us because my wife was an intern at the time. A temp. She had a temp job where she works now. And they had a policy, I don't know if it's still active or whatever, but they had a policy where you could only be a temp for a certain period of time and then you had to go somewhere else. And then after another period of time, you could come back. Well, she had done that before and she was back. And I believe she was getting close to the date. I mean, I got laid off in September. I want to say like November was when this was going to happen. Thankfully, luckily, it worked out that they had a position open up in a completely different department that she applied for and wound up being, you know, one of a few people that got interviewed and nailed it and got the job. And so that was something that allowed me to stay home and keep trying to do the freelance thing, which is what I still do today. And I just think back, you know, today, it just like I said before, it hit me that even the stress of being a parent mixed with trying to hit my deadlines for work now is nothing compared to that dread. Because this at least has, like, more joy to it. I get to be with my daughter, and she's awesome, and she makes me smile every day, even when we have bad days. And I would have good times at work, and working in the city was nice because a lot of my friends who had left the company or had been fired or laid off or however you want to put it were all down there within a pretty close radius. We actually used to work right around the corner from Marvel, and DC was kind of far away, but I would meet a couple of my buddies like halfway, and it would be great. And there was a park near us. We worked near Bryant Park, and a lot of people could come there by train and everything. So there were good moments peppered in with all of this kind of dread. And I still like that job. I would actually still do that job now, just not for the higher up people, which aren't even involved anymore. So it's not really an issue. But I would love to do Toy Fair again. I would do it in a heartbeat. I don't know how it would work. And clearly magazines aren't the thing anymore. But I think it would be a perfect digital magazine. But anyway, that's not the point. If anybody wants to do a digital toy magazine, you let me know, because I'm game. And I know some really quality freelancers who can fill that thing up real quick. So, you know, the moral for today that I've realized is that even when things seem bad, not only is there somebody out there who has it worse than you do, but you've probably been in a situation where you've had it worse in the past. And that's definitely something that I have kind of a new perspective on and a new outlook. Going into a very busy week where I'm trying to get a ton of stuff done to turn in before going on vacation. So again, it's, you know, a lot of work for a silver lining, and then I get to have a ton of fun, and then I get to come back to a job that I really like that's basically kind of the dream job that I've had since I was a kid, which is just writing about comics. One of the key things for me as far as my outlook on the world is kind of trying to reframe how I look at it. You can't change other people, but you can change how you look at things. And by me kind of shifting, you know, from my paranoid worrying about my point of view about my job now to a comparison and how good I have it, I feel like I'm a lot better off right now, which is cool. All right, we seem to be chugging along pretty well here. It's actually Friday. I've got most of the episode cut. Now I'm going to add in these last few parts, get it together, and post it online for Monday. Anyway, going to get into the Papa seal of approval real quick. This time, it's a classic, one that probably you had as a kid, or if you're older, had for your kids. I don't actually know how long they've been around, but today's Papa seal of approval goes to the Little Golden Books. Now, I had a ton of these as a kid. You might recognize these as the books with the gold leaf edge. Apparently now they have chickens and bunnies and bugs on them, and elephants, because those all go together very well. Anyway, these are the little like cardboard books that you'd see at the grocery store. And in fact, that's why I brought it up this time. When we went grocery shopping this week, kind of had a tough time in the baby aisle, which is also the cracker aisle. So I was trying to get stuff on one side, and Lou was freaking out on the other side, looking at and touching every single piece of baby food that was on her face level. And I was like, come on, come on, come on. I looked up. I saw the Little Golden Book spinner rack thing. And I happened to see the Toy Story one. I'd seen it there before, but she hadn't really watched Toy Story at that point. She's watched it and become a big fan now. And so I grabbed it and I showed it to her, and she seemed to get really into it. As you know, these books kind of adapt a lot of things that your kid probably knows about. Like this Toy Story. I saw an Iron Man one I almost got her, but she doesn't really know who Iron Man is yet. If there was a Spider-Man one, I would have gotten that one instead. But, you know, it's just got the cool art style. The back looks the exact same as you remember. There's the pokey little puppy and the little engine that could and a bunch of other things. And so it's just cool. It's cool to have something that kind of goes back to your childhood, even though it's updated for now. And they do have a few of the books, you know, probably Pokey Little Puppy and a few others that are old school that they still keep reprinting, which is neat. The only problem with these books that I've noticed, because she has a few by now. This is not the first time I bought her a Little Golden Book at the grocery store to get her to relax a little bit. But the only thing I've noticed that's kind of hard for her at this point is that the covers are like a thicker cardboard, while the pages inside are, you know, regular paper. So it can be a little hard for her, and even for me, you know, I'm holding it right now and looking at it. It can be a little hard to open the book because if you're not very dexterous, your thumbs kind of close over the thick part, and you're not really able to get to the pages inside. She used to have this trouble a lot more when she was little, not so much anymore. So it's just one of those kind of growing things. But, you know, for being a classic, for being always reliable and something that's not super expensive, this one was $3.99, that you can just kind of get for your kid when they're being bad, and hopefully it's not reinforcing their bad behavior. The Little Golden Book is the Papa seal of approval. Moving right along, I'm going to give the Papa of the week to a pretty interesting character. I watched a movie from the 60s called The Spirit is Willing. Now, this is a movie directed by William Castle. He's the guy that did really classic, gimmicky horror movies like The House on Haunted Hill, which is a favorite of mine, and 13 Ghosts. He would do things like have buzzers in your chair, so when a certain point came on the screen, you'd get a zap, or like a bat would fly through, all these kinds of things. Well, apparently later on in his career, he was doing like B-movie comedies, and he did this one that starred Sid Caesar. Now, he's a comedian that, you know, I know of more than I actually know, But I know that I've seen him in some stuff. I just didn't have a chance to look it up. Anyway, he plays the father of a teenage boy. He and his wife, who's Vera Miles from Psycho, which is pretty cool, they rent this house in New England that's haunted. Now, the boy is like a real smart mouth. He starts experiencing the haunting first, but his parents don't believe him because they think that he's just full of crap most of the time. And to be fair, before all the supernatural stuff starts happening, he is kind of a jerk, and so you're not really surprised. You do feel a little bad for him because, you know, all this craziness is going on. And literally, there's three ghosts. A Navy-type guy was going to marry this ugly lady, and he did, or he was about to, when he wound up kissing the maid. And so the wife killed the girl, and then she got a cleaver into the guy, but before he died, he was able to come up and get his own knife and wound up killing her. All this is shown off screen, and it sounds a lot bloodier and more violent than it is, but in a way, it's very violent, but it's like cartoon violence or like Three Stooges violence, but none of that's really the point. My point is that I actually felt really bad for Sid Caesar's character in this, because, I mean, he's a great actor, and he's really funny, but he also, like, carries a weight to him, like a heaviness, and that worked really well, because there's one part, and I wrote about this when I wrote about the movie, which you can go over and see on unitedmonkey.com, where, you know, the kid just did something. He's hanging out a window and screaming for help. The parents run up and get him and pull him in. And the kid says that somebody pushed him. And they're like, nobody's in here. And certainly didn't push you. And then the kid makes some smart remarks and runs downstairs. And he's angry. And like, there's this moment where Sid Caesar's just like, there goes a stranger. We're living with a stranger. It's played a little for laughs, but I think there's also like a seriousness to it that is the kind of thing that probably happens to a lot of parents when their kids become teenagers and aren't really sure what's going on in their own heads and in their own bodies and kind of just start acting out. I know I had my moments like that. I feel like I was a little bit more empathetic to my parents, and so I didn't have that, like, backlash to everything they said, but, you know, they can comment on that themselves. But it's something that I can understand, and like, now that I'm a parent, it's one of those things that I kind of assume will happen in the future. So I, you know, I feel bad for him. Also, there's a connection because he was an editor who figured he was going to get laid off or fired or something, and I, you know, as I said a few moments ago, I was an editor who got laid off. So that part got to me too, but there was a real heaviness to it. And again, as I mentioned in my review of the movie, I feel like it's a comedy and the horror elements are pretty light. And most of them are off screen, but there's an aspect of the movie that I don't know if is necessarily intentional, that's kind of like everyday life is the real scary thing, not necessarily these ghosts, because the ghosts are mostly played for laughs. But, you know, Sid Caesar's really going through some stuff. He's worrying about his job and how he's going to support his family. And what's wrong with this kid? Like, why is this kid making up all these crazy stories? And luckily, it turns out that there are actually ghosts. And he winds up being okay financially because of some shenanigans that go on with a rich uncle. I don't need to spoil the movie for you. You know, for being a kind of guy in a campy comedy that a dad can relate to and kind of see maybe himself or his future self or a potential future in, it definitely gives Sid Caesar in The Spirit is Willing the pop papa of the week. All right, gang, gonna start wrapping things up here. A few more quick things I wanted to mention. Since we're going on vacation, I took Lucy to her music class on Thursday, and it was actually really interesting because she gets into it, she likes the teacher. I've talked about this class a few times, I think. This time, she kept following this one little girl around, and at first I was like, oh no, Lucy, that kid's just not that into you. Don't let it alone. But after a while, they seem to kind of make friends, which I don't know how two things that can't speak to each other can do, but they did. And a couple times, like, we're all in a big circle singing songs and doing stuff. And a couple times I would look over and they were kind of like sitting next to each other, you know, babbling or whatever. And that was just adorable, you know, kind of seeing her sitting off to the side. Like, I kind of remember sitting off to the side with my friends. I was like, oh, that's awesome. She's kind of like me, and that's adorable. Less adorable, though, was last night when she would just not go to sleep. She took a late nap from like 5 to 7 and wound up looking tired at about 8:30. So my wife tried to put her down, but it just was not happening. And like 10 o'clock rolled around, or 10:30 even, I can't really remember. I think it was 10:30. And, you know, my wife's like, can you help me out? And so I tried to lay down with her, but she was like wide awake. And, you know, as I've said before, I know from my past that just laying in bed and trying to fall asleep doesn't work for me. So I kind of get the impression it doesn't work for her either. And I felt bad for my wife because she was trying to paint her nails like all Minnie Mouse style for the trip. And Lucy was all in her grill, in her space, trying to, you know, see everything that went on with that. And luckily it didn't seem to mess up her nails. They look good. They're polka dotted and one has a Mickey on it. But, like, literally the whole night, and I know this because I wound up going to bed much earlier than I intended because she freaked out when she got into bed with my wife and I didn't go as well. Every 10 minutes she'd be like, "Ooh, look, I found it. Mini polka dots." To my wife's hands, and you know, it was just crazy. The night before that, my wife painted Lucy's toenails with, you know, baby safe nail polish, and so like every time she looks down at her toes she goes, "Ooh, found it," which is really cute. Or I found it, but last night it was a lot less cute because, you know, we're all trying to get to sleep so that today we can focus on getting everything ready. We're mostly packed. Just a few more things, like essential things that haven't gone in yet. And then we fly out tomorrow morning. I've got my fingers crossed that the flight is on time and that Lucy does well on it. I think she should. We've definitely got enough stuff to entertain her. So with that, I'm going to wrap up. My name is TJ Deitch. I am your host. This podcast is posted on poppapa.com. That's poppapa.com. Head on over there for the episode 10 show notes if you have any questions or want to leave any comments. If you want more of me, check out unitedmonkey.com. That's unitedmonkey, M-O-N-K-E-E.com. Even though we're away this week, I've got posts ready to go, I think, every single day, so that's pretty good. Or you can head over to Monkeying Around the Kitchen, which I have been very lax in posting on because I've been so busy with work, and that tends to be the last thing that I wind up getting to. But I do hope to maybe post from Disney on that. We'll see how that goes. And even though I probably won't be tweeting much this week, you can also follow me on Twitter at Papa Deitch. That's P-O-P-P-A-D-I-E-T-S-C-H. All right, everybody. I hope I'm going to have a good week on vacation, and I hope you do too.